The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Good evening, everyone. Happy February. Betcha never thought we'd get through that cold snap, but here we are, shortest month of the year, just a couple of weeks from spring, no matter what the groundhog says, and spring hopes eternal here on my show, Dave's Gone By. 90 minutes of comedy, talk radio, music, and more, coming to you live from Groundhog Heaven, Merrick, Long Island. Hey, did you see us in Newsday this week? Big special thank you to Ken Rasak, who compiles the Punchlines column that appears in the Newsday newspaper on Thursdays. It's a cool column. He'll listen to the late-night talk shows, Letterman, Leno, Conan, Jon Stewart, Craig Kilborn, plus Michael Feldman on public radio, a couple of others, and he'll take the jokes from their monologues and put them in the paper in case people missed the programs. It's fun reading and a quick way of getting the zeitgeist of what the media is glomming onto that week.
Well, lo and behold, this past Thursday, he quoted me, little old Dave, on page 33 of Newsday, January 30th. It's also on the Newsday website if you search for the most recent Punchlines column. I think he picked it because I was riffing on a real Long Island story. It was about that kid who was angry about his test scores in school, so he went home, set them on fire, and threw them out the window. Only the weather being what it has been, the wind not only started a fire outside the house, it blew one of the papers back into his room and started a second fire that gutted the whole upstairs. My joke was that the father came home and told his son he shouldn't have worried so much about showing him the exam, because standardized tests aren't a true measure of intelligence. Setting fire to your own house, however... Well, that was the joke. I now call it my greatest hit. And I want to thank Ken Rasak for including me in his Punchlines column. I feel really proud and honored. I hope that it'll be one of many, but even if it isn't, well, I'm glad the bribery paid off. Happy Groundhog Day, everybody. Such a big deal made of this holiday. Little Rodent comes out, and he tells us whether we're going to have 6 more weeks of winter or 5.5 more weeks of winter. Now, granted, he's still more accurate than Willard Scott, but that's only because Willard Scott hasn't been able to see his shadow in 40 years. And the one time he did, we had 6 more weeks of stupid. No, I'm kidding. I like Jolly Weatherman as much as the next guy. If I've got to listen to someone tell me it's 10 degrees out with a wind chill factor of -3, I want someone with enough blubber to keep both of us warm. And I miss Al Roker's stomach. You know, he had it stapled, and he lost 100 pounds, but he still seems like a regular guy, though. Mainly because he allowed his intestines and stomach lining to be used as insulation for 3 urban elementary schools. And I know women and gay men get all goozy over Sam Champion or Storm Field in his prime, but give me Lloyd Lindsay Young or the Channel 12 weather midget. Whatever happened to him? Give me someone whose 5-day forecast is continuous food. Give me someone who can't point to the West Coast without waddling. Give me someone whose idea of a high-pressure system is his ass on a folding chair. Give me someone who raises the dew point just by lifting his arms. Oh, baby, when it comes to weathermen, I don't want a Dapper Dan. I want a Doppler Dwayne. And me? I'm Dopey Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, playwright, songwriter, theater critic, and Punxsutawney pundit. And my show is a mix of serious talk, silly talk, smart talk, and musical side trips. Now, last week, which was our Australian show, I got some positive feedback for giving out the Super Bowl scores at times during the program. The game started at 6:30, so I was able to give the halftime and third quarter scores, which people were grateful for. It allowed them to listen to Dave's Gone By without feeling they were missing out on the big game. Well, I am not one to argue with what works. Give the listeners what they want. So I'm going to do that again this week. Keep you informed of the Super Bowl score throughout the show. Okay, so at the end of the first quarter, it's a close game. Tampa Bay and Oakland are knotted at 3 apiece. Oakland scored first, but they were answered right back with a field goal for the Bucks. So it's 3-3 in the bottom of the first, and we'll keep you posted the rest of the night as the game develops. But before we move forward, just a reminder that this program is rated DGB 13. That means I will probably say 13 offensive or tasteless things over the next hour and a half, which you may not want your kids to listen to. Nothing obscene or FCC 21, just some double entendres, triple entendres, and basic spewings of rage and delight. And I am delighted to have two different guests tonight, both in that business we call show. Three guests, actually. As part of our Dave's Gone Cultural segment, we'll be talking to Jeff Goodman, a theater critic for many years now, and co-host of the Manhattan cable television program Two on the Isle. I had Jeff's co-host, Charlie Gross, on the program a few weeks ago, so it's only fitting to put Jeff on the critic's chair, too. Jeff's a great personality, so I think you'll want to stick around to hear what he says about such current Broadway shows as Imaginary Friends, Moving Out, Madea with Fiona Shaw, La Boheme, and a whole lot more. And I know we do a lot of theater segments on this show, reviews of shows or interviews with an actor or director, but tonight, something a little different. I'll be talking to David Spencer and Stephen Witkin, collaborators on a new show that's in the workshop stage. It's called The Fabulist, F-A-B-U-L-I-S-T, The Fabulist. And they're having industry readings this Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, February 4th, 6th, and 7th, at the CityCorp building on East 54th Street. There'll be four readings, all of them free and open to the public. So we'll give you the performance schedule and reservation phone number later when we're talking to David and Stephen, who'll be calling from the rehearsal hall. We'll play a selection or two off the show's demo CD so you can decide for yourselves whether The Fabulist is fabulous enough to one day make it to a theater near you. And that's just one reason why you should stick around tonight. If you were with us the previous show, we had another theatrical guest, director Karen Coonrod. Her production of Julius Caesar is currently playing at the Lucille Lortel Theater off-Broadway. The show's press office was kind enough to make a pair of tickets available last week, which we gave away to a lucky listener. Well, the kindness continues, and we have another pair of Julius Caesar tickets to give away, so definitely keep it here for the next 85 minutes. And if you're not into theater, have no fear. That is not the only thing this program is about. We'll have the news gone by, of course, some comedy, some gentle ranting, and music. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and it's time for our weekly segment, The News Gone By, a look at events of the past week from a shadowy perspective. Well, sad news to begin. Lost in space, the space shuttle Columbia disintegrated in flames over Texas yesterday morning. All seven astronauts on board are presumed dead. The tragedy reminiscent of the space shuttle Challenger explosion 17 years ago, nearly to the day. Terrorism is apparently not a factor in the accident, even though, weirdly enough, the shuttle was carrying its first Israeli astronaut and pieces of debris fell down on Palestine, Texas. And apparently there is footage of little blue spacemen in green turbans hurling moon rocks at the Israeli. Now, it is likely that the government will change the acronym for NASA, or as I like to call it, Space Amtrak. From now on, NASA will stand for not another seven astronauts, but seriously, very seriously, every great endeavor has its setbacks, and being spoiled veterans of the space age, we take for granted what are true modern miracles. Not only when a space shuttle accomplishes its mission, but just when an airplane touches down safely on a runway. It takes risks, brave people, brilliant people, fallible people, on both ends of the atmosphere. So here's a radio toast to them all, a sip of vintage wine for the astronauts, and a bottle of Sprite for NASA. I couldn't get 7-Up, but that's okay. They couldn't get 7-Down. On the security front, the federal government is investigating reports that baggage screeners at LaGuardia, Portland, and St. Louis airports were basically spoon-fed their certification exams. The trainees were allegedly told the answers to their final test just minutes before they took it. To be fair, some of the exam questions were tricky. For example, if the screener asks, "Did you pack your own luggage?" and a passenger answers, "No, some guy named Ahmed volunteered to pack it for me," the correct response is not, "Well, that was helpful of him." Some grisly local news. A severed head was found in a frozen section of Forge River in Mauritius. The neck had been cut with a sharp instrument, and a bullet was lodged in the man's skull. Detective Jack Fitzpatrick told Newsday, "What we found has enabled us to narrow down our search." Other detectives confirmed that suicide is looking less and less likely. Forensics has yet to identify the victim, who appears to be a black or Hispanic male, aged 20 to 40. One witness did come forward and say that the man's last words were eerily prescient. The witness said he saw the man walking by the river and asked if he was okay. "Leave me alone," said the man. "I don't know where I be headed." But seriously, what's puzzling the cops is that there aren't any unsolved homicides involving a headless male victim. The closest is a woman's torso found in Manorville 2 years ago. The good news is that with the head and the torso, if they find a pair of legs, they can build a second Michael Jackson. The morbidity continues in local news. Three teenagers in Patchogue went to the Cedar Grove Cemetery and dug up three skeletons, one dating back to 1897. They pried the lids off the caskets, grabbed the bones, and put them in the trunk of their car. Then they drove to a party and tried to show off. They even put a Darth Vader mask on one of the skulls. Days later, a teacher overheard one of the kids talk about it. That led police to a plastic bag in a drainage conduit on Sunrise Highway, where the ill-gotten remains were tucked away. All three teens are charged with felonies. The irony is that for all their sick creativity, they were mocked and ignored at the party, whereas all three skeletons got laid. In business news, the Securities and Exchange Commission is still deciding whether to charge Martha Stewart with violating stock trade laws. They want to know, why did Stewart sell nearly 4,000 shares of ImClone stock just one day before the FDA rejected an application from the company? Stocks, of course, plummeted the day after Stewart and other investors in the know bailed out. Through it all, Martha says she's innocent, and she claims that all the negative publicity has cost her $400 million in potential earnings. In a New Yorker magazine interview published this week, Stewart says, quote, "My business is really about homemaking, but I've been vilified openly as something other than what I really am. It's sort of the American way to go up and down the ladder. I've had a real long way up, and now I've had a long way down." The question remains, can anyone who loses $400 million and stays unbelievably rich and famous actually have a down ladder? Maybe a down step ladder. But really, anyone flirting with $250 million net worth, unless health is involved, has no business talking about down ladders. And yet, I do have to add an editorial comment in Stewart's defense. I actually have a relative who works for her. No joke. She has for several years. She works for Martha Stewart Living magazine and has even been on Martha's TV show a couple of times. And believe it or not, she hasn't got a bad word to say about Martha, not even the B word. And I don't think because she has a gag order or is afraid to speak out. I think she sincerely respects and admires the woman. So while it's not exactly a legal defense, if you're lynching Martha Stewart in the court of public opinion, be aware that there are people who really think she's all right. And come to think of it, she makes pretty good curtains and bed sheets, too. And I'll betcha, after 2 years in San Quentin, she'll have the place looking like the Marriott. On Tuesday night, President George Bush delivered his State of the Union address. He touched on everything from tax cuts to Medicare, from stopping partial-term abortions to funding AIDS research. Of course, the main focus was on Iraq, with Bush promising that on February 5th, Secretary of State Colin Powell would make a speech to the UN Security Council. he'll outline why war is inevitable unless Saddam Hussein tells the truth about his weaponry. "You don't contain Saddam Hussein," the president said. "You don't hope that therapy will somehow change his evil mind." The Freudian president then puffed on a giant cigar and had a bite of a jelly donut given to him by his mother. As kind of an extra treat here on the news gone by, this song was forwarded to me on the internet. I did not write it, and I don't 100% even agree with it, but I think it's pretty funny and worth considering. Call it my Mark Russell moment, so bear with me. If we cannot find Osama, bomb Iraq. If the markets hurt your mama, bomb Iraq. If the terrorists are Saudi and the bank takes back your Audi and the TV shows are bawdy, bomb Iraq. If the corporate scandals growin', bomb Iraq. And your ties to them are showing, bomb Iraq. If the smoking gun ain't smoking, we don't care and we're not joking, that Saddam will soon be croaking, bomb Iraq. Even if we have no allies, bomb Iraq. From the White House lawn they tell lies, bomb Iraq. So to hell with the inspections, let's look tough for the elections, close your mind and take directions, bomb Iraq. While the globe is slowly warming, bomb Iraq. Yea, the clouds of war are storming, bomb Iraq. If the ozone hole is growing, some things we prefer not knowing, though our ignorance is showing, bomb Iraq. So here's one for dear old daddy, bomb Iraq, from his favorite little laddie, bomb Iraq. Saying no would look like treason, it's the Hussein hunting season, even if we have no reason, bomb Iraq. Again, I did not write that, but as James McNeil Whistler said, you will, Oscar, you will. From Iraq, we moved to China and the release of imprisoned businessman Fang Zhu. He was jailed in 1999 for saying his country should have free elections. Happily, Fang was freed from prison late last year, and he's now been sent with a one-way ticket to the United States. The organization Human Rights in China hailed the move, but also complained that the only way China can deal with its dissidents is to expel them. The irony is that Mr. Fang was exiled here for demanding free elections, and this country hasn't had a free election since 1996. Moving to entertainment, a sexy new thriller from the mainstream Indian film industry was just released. The title of the film is the word for the human body in Urdu, Jism. That's J-I-S-M. It's pronounced a little differently. It doesn't rhyme with prism, more like kissum, and no, the word does not have that other meaning in Urdu or Hindi. Now, I have to wonder if the people marketing this film, which has nudity and a number of steamy erotic scenes, whether the producers realize what word they're going to be putting on theater marquees in Little India. Certainly, it's the most naive translation since the slow-moving Iranian art film Ta'ame Gwilas, which was translated as A Taste of Cherry. Actually, that was a perfectly correct translation. But don't tell that to all the guys in raincoats who wanted their money back. From film, we go to television, where lies beget lies. If you've seen Joe Millionaire, you know it's a reality show where women date a guy they think is a dashing multimillionaire, but he's actually just a handsome but unemployed Joe Schmo. He won't reveal the truth until he's picked his favorite. And at the end, we see whether she just liked him for his money or if she really likes him for himself. A lying phony. Well, turns out one of the three finalists on Joe Millionaire is a woman whose job description was listed as sales and design. What they don't mention is that she also appeared in dozens of bondage and foot fetish movies. The finalist, Sarah Kozer, never appeared nude or performed explicit activities in the films, where she was billed as Cindy Schubert. Get it? Schubert? But she was gagged and hogtied, and she helped bind up other people. The Daily News reported that the summary for one video reads, "Mark is forced to smell Julie's bare feet while Cindy tickles him." Now, the best part is the names of some of the films that Cindy / Sarah was in. These are for real, including Sublime Stockings, The Agony of Defeat, Helpless Heroines, Girls Will Bind Girls, Novices in Knots, and my favorite, Tickled and Abused. Now, I could go out on a limb here and say that this was bound to happen, but I'm not one for easy gags. Hey, when did I turn into Whimsical Will? Okay, in a freak accident on Tuesday, a 31-year-old Hempstead man was killed after he stumbled off a curb and fell beneath a U.S. postal truck. The postman driving the vehicle didn't even realize he hit the man until a bystander chased him down and brought him back to the scene. For their part, the Postal Service was willing to ship the victim's body back to his native Venezuela. However, those plans hit a snag when the tape out of the postage meter just would not stick to his forehead. This just in, Tampa Bay has scored 17 unanswered points in the second period to push the Buccaneers to a 20-3 lead over the Raiders. It's just half a minute before the half, so the Raiders will really have to regroup and get themselves together if they want to come back in the third quarter. Stay tuned. We'll keep you updated on the Super Bowl score throughout the evening. And don't miss the Saturday Night Live halftime show where they do something cute about Lord of the Rings. Names in the news from researchers at MIT and the University of Chicago. They did a study on whether people's names had an effect on their perception by others. According to the Associated Press, the colleges sent out 5,000 job-seeking resumes, all with equal credentials, in response to newspaper want ads. Resumes with white-sounding first names elicited 50% more responses than the ones with black-sounding names. For example, names like Neil, Jill, Greg, and Brett received one response for every 10 resumes mailed. The same resumes from people named Rashid, Karim, Ebony, and Tyrone received one response for every 15 resumes mailed. And this is a pervasive problem. I remember when I was hiring interns at my last job, candidates named George, Terrence, and Larry had no chance, whereas candidates named Kimberly, Bobby Joe, and Boom Boom got their first paychecks before the interview was over. Some happy news. By the way, it is 8:02 on Sunday night, February 2nd, on WGBB AM 1240 in Freeport. Just had to put that in there. Some happy news. It's also the Chinese New Year. They began celebrating yesterday, February 1st, the year of the goat or ram or sheep. Their calendar is lunar, so instead of 2003, the Chinese year is 4700. And I guess because they've had all that extra time, they take more time celebrating the holiday. 15 whole days of firecrackers, dumplings, and lanterns. And Chinese scientists are breathing a sigh of relief. They have been afraid that the change from 4699 to 4700 would throw off the beads from their mainframe abacus. Luckily, the jitters were unfounded, and all the changes went smoothly, apart from a few broken fingers from trying to load Chisenbop onto a Palm Pilot. Capping the news gone by, a pair of medical mishaps. Further medical news out of Louisville, Kentucky. Facing a lawsuit, Dr. Michael Gweiler went on Good Morning America and the Today Show to defend his procedure during a hysterectomy. It was a routine operation, but before he removed the uterus, Dr. Gweiler carved his alma mater's initials on it. When the patient and her husband watched the videotape of the operation, they were mortified to see UK being cauterized on her uterus. For his part, the doctor says that marking the organ asymmetrically before it's removed is both a common and necessary procedure during surgery. Patients are informed about their being marked, just not how. For example, when I was circumcised, I was marked NYU for my college, New York University. When basketball player Dennis Rodman was circumcised, he was marked New York University College of Medicine, 1983, all rights reserved. For a good time, call 555-3837. Finally, one last bit of medical news. This was actually in News of the Weird, the syndicated column that appears locally in the New York Post. In December, Taiwanese national Shuo Shang Wang of Michigan, age 29, pleaded guilty to practicing surgery without a license. Specifically, the kitchen table castration of a 48-year-old man at Wang's house. Wang told police he had 50 similar surgeries under his belt. But this patient began to bleed uncontrollably after bursting out laughing while eating a piece of post-operative pie. Now, police recovered two testicles in a Tupperware container in Wang's refrigerator. Makes you wonder what was in the pie. But it also teaches us the medical lesson, if you're searching for testicles, the first place to look is near a Wang. And that's the news gone by for February 2nd, 2003. Please send your comments, opinions, and post-op pie to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. We reserve the right to read your comments on the air, names withheld upon request. That's davesgoneby@aol.com. Please, no jism, I'm allergic. If you're a big fan of Dave's Gone By, and I know I am, why not join the Bystanders, the official Dave's Gone By fan club? Because you can receive a bi-monthly newsletter, get a weekly special email, an autographed membership card, eligible for discounts on show merchandise and local businesses, receive a one-hour best-of audio tape, including favorite moments from the show, and maybe even stuff we couldn't put on the radio. All this for just $10. For the newsletter, the discounts, the email, and the collector's item audio tape, it's a great deal. And if you join before March 31st, we'll throw in a signed picture of the host. Just make a $10 check or money order payable to Total Theater and send it to Total Theater, Box 62, that's 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. You can also join via PayPal to the email address davesgoneby@aol.com. That's davesgoneby@aol.com.
Can you fight?
Suddenly do all kinds of things that I previously did none of them. So quick a blade. Well, fight may not be one of them.
You've a good head on your shoulders. Now to keep it off the floor. I'm Pelipus.
I'm Aesop. How charming.
Heads up.
No one's ever fought to save me.
Never had a sleigh before.
Oh, Pelipus, you'll love it.
Disarming. Heads up. I'm not so sure as you, I like this ownership of men. I was a slave myself and didn't care much for it then.
You?
Got captured for gladiator training. 7 years of carnage, I was bloody entertaining. How do you think I came to be this good? Learned that I could refine the art of war, so I fought my way to freedom and to a mercenary's life. And do for hire what once I did for torso!
You're very good at this.
Thank you.
You do a lot of it then?
A lot of what?
Lopping. You know, off limbs.
Scares you, does it? Kneecap.
I can think of a more pleasant way to spend the afternoon than playing people.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. I'm happy to have another theater guest. Two of them, actually. One is probably best known as the lyricist and co-author of the 1992 off-Broadway musical Weird Romance with composer Alan Menken. He's also collaborated with librettist Rob Barron on music and lyrics for The Phantom of the Opera and Les Miserables. No, not the Broadway versions, but special versions for young audiences produced by TheaterWorks USA. His latest project is called The Fabulist, a collaboration with librettist Stephen Witkin. By the way, I didn't mention that the first guy's name is David Spencer, but Stephen wrote the book for the off-Broadway musical Prom Queens Unchained and for a Broadway show, which I actually saw, called Candles, Snow, and Mistletoe, which starred the three and only Sharon, Lois, and Bram. Now, currently, David Spencer and Stephen Witkin are having workshop readings of The Fabulist. That means the show's been written, the book is finished, all the songs are done. Although they might revise the show a bit later, but at least they have a working draft. And there's some money and interest behind it. Not people who are investing millions of dollars to put it on Broadway so quick, but industry putting in a little money, time, and effort to see if it's good. There were some private readings of The Fabulist, and then Spencer and Witkin received the 2002 Richard Rodgers Development Award for the show. Now, that award funds a series of staged readings, which means there's no sets and costumes. It might just be a musician or two rather than a whole orchestra. But professional actors read the whole script, sing the songs, act the parts, and everyone begins to get a sense of what kind of show it is and if it has a future. And if the writers are lucky, some big money producers come to the readings. If they like it, the show gets a big boost into the world. Because producers and artistic directors are the folks who can say, aha, I want to bring this to off-Broadway, or I want to try this out in a regional theater, and maybe a Broadway house, or tour this around the country for a year, or publish it and make it available to high schools, whatever the scenario. That's where The Fabulist is now. And the Richard Rodgers Development readings are happening this week, February 4th, 6th, and 7th, at the CityCorps building on East 54th Street. Rehearsals are happening as we speak, so thank you, David and Stephen, for taking a few minutes to join us by phone from the rehearsal hall. How's it going?
It's going fine. It's going fine. Very excited. We have a terrific cast. We have...
Now, this is who talking? This is...
Spencer.
David Spencer talking, okay.
And And we have The Fabulist is an epic fable, epic fantasy fable about Aesop. And in the title role, we have Daniel Marcus, who's currently playing Officer Barrel in Urinetown. We have somebody I work with at TheaterWorks a lot named Elizabeth Cherry, who's playing the female lead. We have
Joel Higgins.
Mm-hmm. Playing King Nebuchadnezzar. So we have quite a cast. Rob Gallagher, who was one of the Broadway Javerts, playing a mercenary warrior who becomes Aesop's best friend. So it's a very, very exciting and eclectic group of people.
Yeah, actually, I should have probably even mentioned what the show is basically about. You mentioned Aesop. Is it basically the story of his fables or of his life, or how does that all work out?
Well, it's based on a novel by a fellow named John Vornholt, who is a science fiction and fantasy author, and the majority of John's canon is books based on franchises. He's done a lot of Star Trek novels and a couple of Babylon 5s and various others like that. But The Fabulist is one of the few that is totally original, and it is a sort of a retelling of the story of Aesop's life as an epic fantasy quest. And it's a wonderful book. It was a paperback original, and
nobody knows much about Aesop. All they know are his fables, and that's why the book is so special. He took what little people knew about Aesop, that he existed as a Greek hunchbacked slave who tried to get his freedom, and built this fantasy out of it. And his fables are incorporated into the story, so it's not like it's just a whole evening of fables or anything like that.
Yeah, one of the things that was very exciting about the book is that it's not an anthology with a framework. It's actually the story of him. Excuse me. And it's about how he uses his fables as currency to, seek his goal, which is to find his fate as a free man on the island of Delphi, which is a prophecy he receives earlier in the show.
And it's a great theatrical challenge for us, too, because it's an epic journey in which he goes to Babylon, and he goes into the underworld and to these various kings and sailing ships. So there's a great theatrical adventure that engages our imagination, and it's quite a challenge on how to do it, too.
And one of the things that we discovered in doing our trial reading in the summer was that for all of the epicness, it actually tells a fairly up-close, personal, and intimate story. So it's a very nice balance. It gets the audience very involved, and it's funny, and it's touching, and it's not like anything I've ever seen before, which is exciting.
Let me ask, whose idea was it to develop this material? Do you both sort of want to collaborate on something, and then you both went looking around for, a thing to do?
It actually, it's a very interesting question, because the person whose idea it was originally was the novelist, in the sense that he initially conceived it as a musical. And Stephen and I met at the BMI workshop, and John himself had begun working on a version of The Fabulist, very different from what became the novel. But he started working on it in the BMI workshop himself, in the California branch, while Lehman Engel was still alive. So
Lehman Engel being the founder of that workshop for writers that they talked about in, what was the show about Kleban? A Class Act, if people are familiar with that.
And actually that happened before we even knew about the book. And then the chronology is I just went to the science fiction shop to browse while it was still around, on 7th Avenue, I think. And I saw the book, and it had been published about 6 months before, and I vaguely remembered having read about the book, but didn't remember what it was about. And I took it off the shelf, and I sort of took a look at it, and it was one of those moments where you know that something in your life has changed, because I just knew that, you know, it was going to become a part of, you know, my resume, as it were.
Now, how do you guys work together? First of all, it's the old question of words or music, or music and words first,
structure.
Or book first?
The structure is first, always.
Yeah, we've pretty well worked into a formula that works for the two of us. We talk at great length, and then we agree on the structure and what we call beating out a scene. Not even thinking of it as a musical yet, but just as the structure. Do the beats, and then I will take it away and write a scene based on the beats that we agreed with. Then I hand David the scene, and he finds the song, or what to musicalize.
Yeah, and we'll go through several steps, and we'll back and forth on it. But always the it's always the spine of the thing that leads the way. You know, I can only think of, there's only one song in the score I can think of where the song actually solved the structural problem. And that song is called Being Remembered, which is what King Nebuchadnezzar sings to Aesop about what he most wants in life, which is actually to be remembered after he's gone. He wants to leave his legacy. And we spent a long time not quite knowing, theatrically speaking, who Nebuchadnezzar was and how he was going to function in our story. And we went through a couple of drafts where he was kind of like the swarthy, mustache-twirling baddie like you've seen in a thousand, you know, movies with Arabs and turbans and things. and it just wasn't working, and it was sort of making both of us very tired every time we would talk about it. And so I just sort of sat down with my graph pad and started to sketch things, and I asked myself, you know, musical theater 101, okay, what does this guy really want? Oh, he wants to build the obelisk. He wants to be remembered. He's Donald Trump. And as soon as I knew he was Donald Trump, it sort of defined him as a song and dance man, and as a movie. And then I called Stephen up and I said, what about this? And he goes, well, that works for me. And then it was like the floodgates opened. But that is the only time where, oh, that's somebody at the front theater. That's the only time where
Well,
the structure didn't lead the way.
Okay. Guys, I've got to cut you off here. I'm sorry.
I'll be right back.
Actually, I've got to cut you off here, but I want to remind people that the show, the readings are February 4th, 6th, and 7th. Reservation number is 212-935-5820. 935-5820. The readings are free, but you do have to make a reservation. I want to wish you guys best of luck. Hello?
Bet my spleen that the cork in the jug wouldn't pop. Did you think I would suffer silently because I'd never have another choice? Well, think again, you fart, 'cause I'm just getting started. I like the sound of my own voice.
How dare you?
Easy. I got a lot to get off my hump.
Do you know, do you know how ridiculous you are from the look of the clothes and the stench? Do you know how they laugh behind your back when you bend and show your crack or you try to charm a wench? Ah! You have more hair in your nose and your ears than you have on your head. Are you mad or is your eyesight also gone? Well, hold on, you bag of gas. The wind of truth is passing. I like to hear myself go on.
You hold your tongue.
Hey, hold this. I have a few suggestions, too.
You're a bigger disaster at running a farm than you are as an adequate man. You could irrigate faster, downhill does no harm. Also, weeding is sometimes a plan. No one works at their best or with pride, 'cause they know either way you lash out with your cane. And on top of that, you're too dense to use the common sense that would improve the land, the work, the gain, the very wine that soaks your brain. Uh-huh. I don't know, but I somehow feel this urge like you're only target one. 'Cause I mean, the stupidity of man needs a universal purge, and I'm having so much fun. Someone has to expose the fool from the one who serves to the one who rules, and the task alone is reason to rejoice. So, don't look for reverence, don't hope for leniency. I have the evidence, no secrets safe with me. I like the sound of my own voice. That I wouldn't. Will you better think again, because I do.
We had a little phone trouble in that last segment, so I want to apologize to the guys, and I want to remind people again, you can see a staged reading of The Fabulist at the CityCorps building, Lexington Avenue and 54th Street. That's where the York Theater Company has been working out of the last few years, and they're helping present it. And David and Stephen, thanks guys for calling in, they mentioned the actors, Daniel Marcus, Elizabeth Cherry, Valerie Fagan, and Joel Higgins. Yes, he was the dad in Silver Spoons with little Ricky Schroeder. But But don't hold that against him. Joel Higgins has been doing theater for over a decade. And he's doing the Fabulous Tuesday, February 4th at 2:30. Thursday, February 6th at 3:30. Friday, February 7th at 11 a.m. and 3:30. Tickets are free to the public, but you have to reserve. Don't call me. Call the York Theater at 212-935-5820. 935-5820. And speaking of free tickets, as we did last week, we have a pair of ducats to give away for Julius Caesar, a full-scale off-Broadway production at the Lucia Lortel Theater. It's in modern dress. It's only 2 hours long. I'm told it moves like lightning, and a lot of critics have found it quite relevant and action-packed. You can pick any matinee or evening performance between February 6th and March 2nd. All you have to do is call into the show, area code 516-955-1240, and say the secret word, Coonrod. That's the director's name, C-O-O-N-R-O-D, Coonrod. If you are the first caller saying the secret word, Coonrod, you win the Julius Caesar tickets. They'll be reserved in your name at the box office window. You just have to show some ID and be there at least 15 minutes before curtain on the night of the show. So call the station now, 516-955-1240. We're not putting you on the air. The engineer will take your name, email address, and phone number, and give you all the info. To claim the tickets, you must be 18 years of age or older, no direct family members of me or anyone at GBB, and you can't have won anything from GBB in the past 6 months. Call 955-1240, say the secret word, Coonrod, and you'll win two tickets to see Julius Caesar playing at the Lucia Lortel Theater on Christopher Street in Greenwich Village. In just a little while, I'm anticipating a zany conversation with Jeff Goodman, theater critic for Cable TV's Two on the Isle. But first, this being February 2nd, Groundhog Day, I figured it might be fun and educational to poke our heads underground, as it were, and get a look at what Punxsutawney Phil really has to go through on this important day. Get out your shovels and your listening devices. It's time for a little reality radio. Not the mole, but the groundhog. Shh. Let's listen.
Phil. Phil, are you there?
Who is it?
Phil, is that you? It's hard to see.
Who wants to know?
My name's Mike. You know, Mike.
I don't know any Mikes.
Think harder.
I don't have to think harder.
Not true, buddy. You better start thinking a lot harder or we're both screwed.
Go away.
Not until you hear me out.
I don't know any Mikes.
Here, let me give you a hint. Ow, ow, my eyes, the sun, it hurts, it burns.
Oh, wait, was that?
2 years ago, I'm that Mike.
You mean the one who, oh, that was awful.
Damn right. Tacked on a whole extra month of my hibernation. I missed the mating cycle.
Well, it was your own fault.
I know, I was excited.
If you're sleeping in a hole for 3 months, you don't dash out into the sunlight and look right at the sky.
Oh, did I have migraines?
I'll bet.
If it had been last year.
Last year it was overcast.
Exactly.
In fact, it was pouring. I got soaked.
Look, the point is you were on vacation. I covered for you.
So what do you want, a medal?
No, I don't want to do it again, and you're not going to make me.
This has nothing to do with you.
It has everything to do with me. If you miss it again, I'm the one who has to cover for you.
So refuse. You shouldn't be a scab anyway.
Last time you were on vacation, fine. But this time, I mean, what the heck are you striking for anyway?
Not getting soaked, for one thing. All these humans standing around with raincoats and umbrellas, and I'm darting back and forth, freezing my tail off. They're all laughing and taking pictures. I'm out searching for any skanky female woodchuck to wink at so I can go home and get some sleep.
Look, they say the weather will be fine tomorrow, close to 40 degrees.
Yeah, but the grass is still freezing. It's wet from the old snow, and I'm dead tired. Really, if you're going to get me out of my hole before late March, you better have a damn good benefits package.
Didn't you just get a health plan 4 years ago?
Big deal. I can visit my primary owl twice a year, and I get a free herbal plant every Passover. We want more. We demand more, but management won't listen.
Yeah, they do. Sometimes. Just last year, they put in that irrigation system. Just push a button and all the water you need is at your claw tips.
Cheap, shoddy work. Do you know how many of the boys were flooded out of their holes because the pressure was too strong? And I personally know 5 other groundhogs who came down with dysentery from the bad water.
Well, if things are so messed up, Why are you here instead of meeting with the human delegates?
There's no point. Negotiations broke down last night over dental coverage.
Phil, nobody gets dental coverage anymore. Not even the alligators.
Well, too bad. I'm tired of chipping my molars on rocks because I'm so groggy I mistake them for crab apples. Plus, you know what they want us to do, right?
What's that?
It's not enough. We have to do the shadow dance. Now they want to have a woodchucking contest.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
It's not enough. I had to refinish all the wood in my den because of the damp. It's not enough that we chew all summer to keep our molars down. I mean, how much wood can a woodchuck chuck?
Okay, it's true. They've been stacking lumber in Gobbler's Knob since May.
Yeah, they can gobble my knob, I'll tell you that.
But a lot of the other groundhogs are excited about it. The marmots want their own Olympic team.
Well, goody for you. And when the humans want to set up a breeding contest or put our mating habits on 24-hour webcams, you marmots will sing a different tune.
But going on strike?
Woodchucks of the world, unite!
Sure, easy for you to say. How about the damage a strike could do?
What damage?
Before they started building up Groundhog Day in this country, do you know
what... Oh, don't give me the bad old days speech.
Do you know what they used to call us? The humans? They used to call us rats. Rodents.
Yeah.
We're as entitled to the land as they are. But they used us for target practice. Instead of irrigating our holes, they pumped in rat poison.
Yeah, until those geniuses realized it was getting in their food. Serve them right.
Yeah, but the point is, they finally started learning a little respect from the Indians. And the Germans, of all people, came over with their Candlemas Day. They couldn't find any badges, so they chose us. Just like that, we went from being pariahs to superstars!
Yeah, superstars, one day a year, pests the other 364. That's why we want better food, better medical, security in our old age.
We only live 5 years.
Yeah, but those last 6 months, you slow down, you can't move, you get diseases. We need assistant living, round-the-clock nursing care. If they need to relocate some beavers from the outer burrows, so be it.
You realize, if one of us doesn't come out and see our shadow, or not, they'll get someone else.
A scab. And when he gets home from his little holiday in the sun, he'll find a few friends waiting for him. His winter is going to last a lot longer than 6 weeks.
What if they don't use another groundhog? Humans are fickle, you know. They might get a pig, or a chicken.
A chicken? What, are they nuts? A chicken sees his own shadow, he pisses himself and runs into a tree.
Okay, I'm just telling you what I heard.
Well, you heard wrong. A pig. Replace a sweet, adorable groundhog with a fat, lazy pig. Serve them right if he came out and farted on the children.
But do you understand the predicament? Humans need their holiday, and they will have it, whether it's us or someone else.
But if we just let them walk all over us, that's what they'll do. At least now we have a bargaining chip. If we wait until after tomorrow morning, that's a whole year before we get the upper paw again.
So what do we do?
I don't know. Striking seemed like the... Wait a minute.
What?
I've got it.
Tell me.
I don't go out there. You don't go out there. We both go out there.
What?
Together. We come out of two different holes next to each other. You make like you see the shadow. Ooh, go running back to your hole. I go poking around, looking for females, smiling for the camera, not a shadow in sight. They won't know what to make of it. Meanwhile, we've done our job, they got their holiday, and their farmers are going to go crazy wondering what the weather will be.
You know, that's so bizarre. It just might work.
I think it will. Are you with me?
I get to see my shadow and run right in, right?
You'll barely even get your fur wet.
I'll have to run this by the other members. Put it to a vote.
Well, do it. We need to be unified on this. Meanwhile, I'm going to have a wash. Never know when that cute little gopher from Pittsburgh might show her tail.
Hey, if she has a sister, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, a brother.
Get out of here.
All right, dog, cat, whatever.
You wood slut. See you later.
Hey, Phil.
What is it?
Happy Groundhog's Day.
You too.
Hi, folks. Dave Lefkowitz here from Dave's Gone By, and I want to tell you about a product, event, or service. I'm going to talk about it for half a minute or a minute. I'm going to make it really interesting, and all my listeners are going to go, hey, maybe I'll try this product, event, or service. It's called advertising or sponsorship, and it's easy, cost-effective, and just plain effective. To get your person, place, or thing, well, not thing, promoted on Dave's Gone By and reach listeners all over Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, and the tri-state area, just give us a call at 516-295-1511 or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. Check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, and see sponsorship opportunities, ad rates, and more. Again, the number, 516-295-1511. Insert your product, event, or service here. And speaking of insertions, if you're home on Friday nights listening to the radio, you're either married or desperate. Either way, catch Long Island's Dating, a show for singles, by that very singular personality, Bonnie D. Graham. Bonnie talks live with guests and callers about all facets of solo life, sex, health, sex, personal ads, relationships, and sex. Bonnie's a comedian, TV host, and MC, so whatever your habitational status, check out Long Island's Dating, Friday nights, 6 p.m. on WGBB. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and Dave's Gone Cultural with my very special guest, Jeff Goodman. He's on Manhattan Cable Television, co-host of Two on the Isle, which is a theater review show in the Siskel and Ebert tradition, the way they do movies. He and Charlie Gross do shows, and we spoke to Charlie a couple of weeks ago on the program and talked about some of the shows that are on and off Broadway, and we're going to do the same with Jeff. So first, I want to welcome him. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. Nice to be here, Dave.
And you're kind of familiar with Merrick, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm kind of a homegrown product of Merrick.
Really? Literally born here, or?
Well, actually, I grew up here. My house was a swamp before we moved in.
Well,
I lived on landfill.
It's actually worse now, which is the scary part. No,
my high school's sinking.
Is it really?
Yeah, Kennedy High School in Belmore sinks about half inch a year, I think. Pretty soon it's going to be underwater.
And the kids are actually up to their knees daily.
That's
as
right.
They slog through assembly.
Well, Amy Fisher did go there, yeah.
Well, how long have you been a critic?
I've been a critic since 1980, so that would be 22 years.
Oh, my gosh. Do you remember the first show you reviewed?
I'll never forget it. The first show I ever saw, I was invited to Pirates of Penzance in the park, opening night. And at which point, the press agent said, oh, afterwards, there's a party, so come on in. And I got on, and there was a reception line, and it was Joe Papp, Ed Koch, and that Kennedy woman.
I mean, Jackie O?
Yes.
Or the yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, I didn't know what to say to her. That, now I want, you know, can I have a couple million? Would have been a good thing to
say. Well, no, that new heiress, you should talk to about that.
Oh, well, did I tell you that I love that, not Christina, the Onassis chick?
You love her? You're gay, dude. What do you mean you love
her? What's her name?
I don't know. I really don't remember.
I forgot. Oh, my God, I have to go look it up and then propose to her.
She's only 18, dude. She's, like, you know, half your age anyway.
But that's okay. She likes older men. She's dating a married man now.
Oh, is she really?
Mm-hmm.
This is going on the air.
Buying him. I know.
All right.
That's what I heard this on Entertainment Tonight, so I know it's true.
Okay. WGBB cannot be held responsible for any of this. Nor can I. Can't be held responsible for our views about the theater, which is what we really should
be. But Charlie can be held responsible for my feelings.
Okay, yes, Charlie can. Charlie Gross is a great guy, by the way. And how long has Two on the Isle been on the air?
That you have to ask Charlie. I think it's been about 12, 13
really?
Years.
Yeah, it has been more than a decade. On Manhattan Cable Television Channel...
I think 57.
You think? Oh,
well,
God.
I'm one of the few people, besides WGBB, I'm the other house on Long Island with an antenna.
Well, but it's also streaming on the web, so people who aren't in Manhattan can now watch it on web, and do you know what the URL is?
I think it's MNN.com or something.
Because it's Manhattan Neighborhood Network.
Right.
So if you go to Google and do Manhattan Neighborhood Network and get to that website,
right.
You'll be able to
actually, if you
it.
Look up my name, I was a little vain and I did look up my name once. And
you
came,
Googled yourself.
I came up, but usually it comes up with John Goodman before you get to Jeff Goodman.
Well, yeah. Well, you do quotes, you know, quote, Jeff Goodman, unquote,
oh,
and that keeps the name together.
Because what happened is John Goodman and Jeff Bridges did a movie together.
Yeah.
So it,
John, yeah, gotcha.
That kind of kept on coming.
Do the quote thing. You'll find it very effective. Anyway!
Oh, I'm sorry.
Half the segment's over. We haven't talked about one show. No, but seriously, let's get into it. What is the most recent show that you have been to?
Well, last night I went to see Les Mis because I felt I'd miss it if I didn't see it again, and I saw it, and I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. It's moving on, as it were."
Well, yeah. Actually, they re-extended again. It was going to close in the middle of March, and it's been selling well, so they've now extended Les Mis till May 18th.
Oh, sure. Wait till after I buy the ticket, and then say they're extending it.
Well, how many times have you seen Les Mis?
This was my fourth time.
And
I still liked it. I think it's really, really kept up well. It seemed to go a little faster, and you mentioned to me that they cut out 15 minutes or something.
Yeah, this was about 2 years ago. I think it had to do with paying the unions overtime because the show ran past 11 o'clock. It was about 3 hours and 12 minutes, and it took forever for Jean Valjean to die. You know, it was like 11:05, and he's still singing.
You know what? You're right. His death was a lot quicker.
Yeah.
You're right. It was. I think it was that. It may just be that scene.
But it was one of those. I haven't seen the show since they've cut it. But I've heard that it's one of those things that they did for money, but it ended up improving the show. That kind of dragged in the last half hour.
I don't know if it improved it, but it's. I'll tell you, I was very surprised. It starts on the dot at 8. It's a 15-minute exactly intermission. The lights came down. Half the people weren't in their seats, but those lights came down.
Right. And it's still a great show. I mean, it is a wonderful
It's
piece.
Absolutely fabulous. I mean, it's still a very moving piece, and if people are out there who haven't seen it, why did you wait so long?
Yeah.
But
And you have a few more weeks.
You really have to go see it. I mean, because those high school productions. Also, it's still out in high schools now. You know, they released it last year.
Oh, I didn't realize
high school,
that.
And they cut it.
They
really cut it till about like 2 hours or something.
He doesn't even steal the bread anymore. He's already in prison.
Well, he doesn't steal
no, that's
the bread.
Right. He doesn't steal it. Yeah.
But Fantine just passes away in her sleep. She doesn't come out and sing. I don't know.
Well, that way they get the really younger, like, you know, from junior high school to do it, so they don't have to actually act. They just die
and
sleep. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, I think the word whores might be removed from that. Can you imagine? Oh, I'm so proud of my daughter. She's in Les Mis. Really, what she's playing? Oh, a whore. She's playing a French whore.
Well, you know, just grooming them for college. But anyway, what else? I don't know what that means. What else have you seen? Let's talk about some of the stuff that's recent and still playing, such as, what did you think of Moving Out, the Billy Joel thing?
Not much. I thought it was actually two different musicals. There was actually one dance piece and one musical, and I give all the credit in the world to that guy who sings the Billy Joel songs and plays the
piano. Don't remember his name, yeah. But
he was great. Well, not only does he sing it and play it, he's going in three different dimensions. He's like on this movie. He's like on the Starlight Express. You remember that?
It goes
X, Y, and Z axis, you know? It's everywhere. And he's moving, and then people are dancing that make no sense beneath him.
Well, what makes
with
no
an
sense?
With an old car, and so there's no storyline.
That was my problem. I think the first half hour is just these people dating each other again and again. They're doing all these dances that are making ritual dances repetitively, and I'm like, okay, get on with it.
But luckily one of them dies in the Vietnam War.
Well, that gets kind of interesting, didn't you think, or not?
No.
Really?
I must tell you that I liked it because I liked the music, but by the end of I saw it on a Friday night, strangely enough, and halfway through the second act, I was trying to think of what I had to do over the weekend.
Oh, that's a bad sign.
I really did start to just go.
So that's what happens to Billy Joel when he gets in a car. But I don't know what that means. I'm sorry about that. What about, now here's something
now
that
you can't write to Charlie about.
Okay.
I didn't say that.
Okay. Here's a show I did not like at all, and you seem to love. Madea with Fiona Shaw. It was at Brooklyn Academy of Music. They moved it to Broadway for a limited run. You loved it. Why?
I thought it was a fascinating Madea. It was the first time I've seen Madea without being bored to tears. I mean, it told the story. It was a very feminized version.
Well,
and they had. I love the Greek chorus of women.
Really? Oh, I thought they couldn't act. I thought they were just shrieking half the time.
Oh no, I thought that was great. I thought Jason was actually portrayed. I think he was portrayed really well. And also, she gave a little bit more personality to Madea. Rather than being all angry, you kind of really learned her motivation, because everyone knows she kills the kids.
Yeah, no, but in Madea, you do get her reasons, no matter what production.
I know, but I never got it from, like, Diana Rigg was the last person to do it on Broadway.
That was another strange staging. I like that one better, though.
A lot of people say that, but I love this one. I think Fiona Shaw should really be up for a Tony for this. I thought she did an amazing job.
You know, She is an amazing actress. She's an extraordinary technical actress. And yet, I could see her going over every single line in Medea and figuring out what movement to put with it. It seemed almost mechanical. She's such a great actress I was like, I'm going to saw my arm on this line, I'm going to cross on here. And it was all done technically beautifully, but I watched the actress acting rather than this,
really?
Yeah, this thing. And I just thought the whole modernization of it all, and that the modern, almost hospital-like set and the loud noises. It
I got it as an office building with those glass, all that glass.
Yeah, what's the point?
I don't know. Well, they put a pool there. They want it to be a little more metamorphosisical.
Oh, it was like what did you think of Metamorphosis?
I thought it was okay. I thought Metamorphosis could have been done better, strangely enough.
Oh,
and
wow.
I know you loved Metamorphosis.
I love that show. And please, everybody, it's closing soon. Please see it at Circle
in
the Square.
It's closing mid-February, I believe.
Probably 2 weeks from now. So if you haven't, I am begging you to see that beautiful show. But you were nonplussed about it,
I thought it was okay. I mean, I thought it was something that needed to be done. I think it's one of those things you still say, wow, why didn't anyone do that before? Because I think it was a good show. You did learn stuff from it, and it was entertaining. But I thought it could have been done a little bit better.
Really?
And they need a little bit deeper pool.
All right.
I was all upset when no one jumped in. Maybe it was a performance I saw, but they didn't really use the pool that much. It was mostly acting on the edges, and they didn't jump in and splash around.
Well, it's not Sondheim's The Frogs. I mean, there was stuff to be done around the pool, and then when they needed to go in the water,
but if you're
going
into the pool, use it.
They did. They used it constantly. People were constantly getting wet, going in, lying on rafts. Oh, I don't see it again before it closes, please.
I'm not going to be around. I leave for Thailand in a couple of days.
Oh, right. Okay, that's right. You're the world traveler. I want to actually talk with you about that on a different segment, because you've already been to Thailand once and had some rather amazing experiences there.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're going back to there and Vietnam, is it?
Yes.
Cool. Another segment, but I want to finish up with a couple of theater stuff on this one.
Great.
Imaginary Friends.
Loved it. We're like becoming a Siskel and Ebert here, because I loved it, and you?
I liked it. Oh, I got bored with it after a while, though.
Really? I loved it. I thought, I sort of knew the story.
What is the story?
The story is Mary McCarthy and, how come I never remember this, Lillian Hellman are not friends at all. They're actually contemporaries.
And they barely met each other at all in their lifetime.
But Lillian Hellman always went in her writing, had this way of bending the truth a little bit. And Mary McCarthy was a very truthful writer. She did war stories, and she did more actual events, and she didn't believe in bending the truth. And one day on Dick Cavett's show, Mary McCarthy had Dick Cavett ask her a question if there was any of her contemporaries that weren't, up to snuff, as it were. And she said, well, yes, it's Lillian Hellman. Lillian Hellman would be that. And he asked her why, and she said, well, every word that comes out of her mouth is a lie, including and thee.
Right. And that sensational line.
That was unbelievable. And then, of course, Lillian Hellman sued her, which would have been great, because it would have come to the court, but Lillian Hellman died.
Oh, is that what? Okay.
Oh, yeah, Lillian Hellman died.
And what's interesting, although it's a boring scene, but it's kind of cool in the show, is you see McCarthy working on that line and puzzling, how should I put it? And or but? No, and
well,
but, and
then
it, the,
She said it before. The first time she said it was in a newspaper article. She was quoted as and but. And then she was working it in her mind to, how could I make it sound even better?
Yeah. My problem with Imaginary Friends is just that, especially in the last half hour, they seem to be wandering around looking for an ending. It knows it's undramatic because they get a special surprise person to testify there, and she's anticlimactic, and just because she says she's anticlimactic doesn't make it dramatic. So you've got that a play acknowledging that it has a problem, but that doesn't take away that it's
but
a problem.
But I see now, I thought this play was not so much building to a climax, but the progression and what would have happened had they had a trial. And the fact is that the fact that they made it anticlimactic was a climax because of the fact that they're saying that, well, the best thing about the whole thing is that Lillian Hellman died, which made it so unusual.
I don't think it was the best thing about for her.
Well, I don't think she appreciates it as much as... No, but you know what I'm saying? That if there's a very big lawsuit and someone dies, well, if it drops, it's like a story that ends sentence that ends, mid-word.
Yeah, and I don't want to end mid-word on that, first of all, without saying that Cherry Jones is just amazing again.
And Swoozy Kurtz.
And Harry Groener. He does about 12 different roles.
He plays all the men in their life.
Yeah. I mean, there are some other actors in there who do little, but he
and
basically
also the fact that it's not a musical, but it's truly a play with music. It's truly different.
Yeah, but I'm not sure it knows what it wants to be. That is another problem with it. It's kind of a hybrid thing.
Well, I don't think it could have been a musical because I don't think it would have been a successful musical. But I think without the music, it wouldn't have been as powerful. To me, I mean, like that. Fact and Fiction number.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. The little soft shoe.
Right.
About the two people.
I just wonder if they didn't vaudevillize it and really barrel through it in an hour 45 minutes instead of expanding it into this hybrid thing that took 2.5 hours, if it really would have hit home a lot more.
No. I wouldn't have wanted to see a play about that. I wanted to be entertained, and I was glad we went back, even though a lot of people didn't like when they went back to their youth.
Mm.
But I thought it all worked. It worked really well for me. I think it's a good show to see.
I'm going to move on quickly to one or two other things.
Okay.
La Boheme?
La Boheme, no matter what, it's still opera. I don't get it. It's not that it wasn't a good production, but I think what it is, and it's just me, even though they had all the subtitles, I'm like hooked up on the wording. So I like them waiting for the next subtitle, and I don't watch the action, which is kind of weird.
Well, the subtitles, they were kind of interesting. They funkified them a bit. You know, like
they groupified
slang
them.
And weird fonts for the things. It was the only thing I really objected to. The rest I liked. You know, La Boheme is a lovely piece.
And what I really enjoyed, though, was Baz Luhrmann did give us a midget. In Act 2.
Yes, a midget. And I thought the set design in Act 2 was gorgeous.
Oh, wasn't that great? His wife did the set design, which is terrific.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I thought all the set, the L'Amour set was great. I thought, you know, even their home.
The Garrett, yeah.
Yeah.
One last show that I want to do off-Broadway, because I think we both liked it a lot, and I want to give a plug to it, basically, is a revival of a London play called Comedians.
Yes.
By Trevor Griffiths.
Trevor Griffiths. Whatever happened to him after that?
He probably had plays done every year in London, and they never crossed the water.
I really don't think he wrote a lot. It's like, someone else wrote a law play, and he was a lawyer. Oh, no, Elephant Man, Bernard Pomerantz. No, I don't think he wrote anything after Elephant Man.
Interesting.
But Comedians is such a brilliant...
it's a good play.
It's a play. It's not a comedy, really, although it has comic moments. Some of them are not very funny.
Yeah, they're not supposed to be. Yeah.
Right. But I saw it originally in 1977 at the Music Box, and
with Jonathan Pryce as the young comic coming up.
Yes.
Who was the character now played by Jim Dale, the teacher?
I cannot remember who played that, but but also in the cast was a young John Lithgow.
Wow,
he played the one of the brothers.
Mm-hmm.
He played the brother.
One of the comedian brothers.
And it was amazing. I mean, and Jonathan Pryce, even though Raul Esparza is wonderful in this.
He is, yeah.
Jonathan Pryce was 6 times better.
Oh, my gosh, really?
When he did the last thing, first of all, his puppets, because he ends up doing an act with puppets, and his puppets were really just smaller ventriloquist dummies.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, it just... You just were mesmerized by what was going on. And a little
frightened, I hope.
Yes. Oh, you were scraping chins off the floor. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And this, although it was good, I love William Duell. I'm so glad to see him back.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the first Broadway show I ever saw as playing an old dying man in 1776.
Yeah.
And he's back playing... I've never seen him play young.
Yeah, I couldn't understand what he was saying when he spoke, but when he mutters and looks and wipes the blackboard...
Oh, he just is always
wonderful.
Complaining. He's a total janitor who just hates everybody. Just get out of school and let him clean the blackboard.
I'm not sure how much longer Comedians is running. Might be only another couple of weeks, or it might be an open run, but...
No, I think it's limited.
Yeah.
So go down to... It's on Theater Row. It's 42nd Street. It's a Samuel Beckett?
It's in the Beckett Theater, which is now part of this wonderful theater complex. One building with all these new little theaters in it. God bless them for doing this. And God bless you, Jeff, for making this segment fly by so fast.
Thank you.
Enjoy your time in Thailand.
Thank you.
And thank you for giving us this wonderful time on Dave's Gone By. Broadway. Off-Broadway, cabaret. These are magical words conjuring up a universe of great entertainment. If you want to know everything about what's happening on the stages of New York, you need to get Performing Arts Insider magazine. For 60 years, Performing Arts Insider has been a bible of the industry. It tells you when shows are opening and closing, what they're about, who's in it, designers, writers, composers, contacts for producers and managers, box office info, parental guides, everything you need to know if you care about theater, opera, and dance, too. As the chief editor of Backstage put it, Performing Arts Insider is who, what, where, and when, all the facts at your fingertips. For more information, how to subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511 or go to www.totaltheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. And sight, shadows and light, we've had them tonight. Joni Mitchell there, title track from her 1980 live album, Shadows and Light, and I hope we've lightened up your weekend, giving you a few wood chuckles for Groundhog Day, some spare rib ticklers for Chinese New Year. Special thanks to my guests, David Spencer and Stephen Witkin, authors of The Fabulist at York Theatre, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Again, tickets are free to those readings, so call for more information and reservations, 212-935-5820, 212-935-5820. Also, a reminder that Julius Caesar is playing now through March 2nd at the Lucille Lortel Theater on Christopher Street. It's a brisk, modern production directed by the esteemed Karen Coonrod, my guest last week. And if you didn't win the pair of tickets tonight, you are heartily encouraged to see the show anyway. Call Telecharge 212-239-6200 for tickets to Julius Caesar. A couple more thank yous. Gracias to Susan Chicoine and Joe Trentacosta for all their help. Thank you, of course, to my special guest, Jeff Goodman. Also, he's Jeff Goodsport for helping me on that Groundhog sketch. Jeff and Charlie Gross both co-host Manhattan Cable. Jeff and Charlie Gross both co-host Manhattan Cable TV's Two on the Isle Theater Show. It's on Tuesday nights at 7:30, Channel 57 on Time Warner Cable. If you don't have that service, go to mnn.org. M as in Manhattan, N as in neighborhood, N as in network. You can watch the show streaming live on the web. They're not archived, but they are live streaming Tuesday nights, 7:30. Jeff is also, by the way, owner and proprietor of Fancy Schmancy Balloons, located in Hicksville. If you have a wedding, bar mitzvah, sweet 16, corporate event, and you need amazing balloon archways and designs and giant poster boards of characters like The Simpsons or South Park, beautiful centerpieces, I've seen photos of his work. Jeff is the man. Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 516-939-0305. 939-0305. And don't put your pencil down. Here's a reminder about some other programs on WGBB. Friday nights, 6 o'clock, Long Island's Dating. What do the single folk do? Find out with host Bonnie D. Graham, 6 p.m. on Fridays. Saturday nights, 5:30, it's Entertainment Long Island, hosted by Don Lewis. It's music and interviews about getting started in the performing arts. Also Saturday nights, 7:30, it's Joe Salzone Live, news and politics from a young Republican perspective. And thank you also again to the folks at Teen America for having me as their guest tonight, but you can hear them every Sunday night, 6:30 to 7:30, giving the Teen and humorous perspective. And yes, I guess there is more to WGBB than gospel plowing and Chinese Maoing. And of course, there's me, Dave's Gone By, Sunday nights at 7:30. Check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. The site has playlists of all the music on the show, archival information, plus how to advertise, become a sponsor, or become a member of our growing Bystanders Club. You want to join the club? It's only $10. And you get all the cool club stuff. A bi-monthly newsletter, a weekly email, the best of audio tape, and opportunities for other discounts and free items. Most of all, you're helping support the show. The website again, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. If you forget the URL, do a Google search for Dave's Gone By, and we are first on the list. Before I forget, Tina and Alfonso from Lindenhurst, celebrating their 10th wedding anniversary, they want me to dedicate this next Super Bowl score to them. Congratulations, you two, but I hope you don't have money on the Raiders. Wasn't even close. 5 interceptions grabbed by the Bucks, and they ran away with it, 48-21. That is a final score. So this is for you, Tina and Alfonso, you crazy lovebirds. Tampa Bay 48, Oakland 21. And folks, if you're listening on the web and you're in Oakland, you probably want to stay off the streets because a riot is brewing and there's going to be 6 figures worth of damage. So stay home, drink a beer, crap over the bags of gluts, and enjoy the rest of your night. Special thanks to Station Manager Joey. Thank you, Engineer Joe, and as always, Engineer Paul. Feel better, Paul. Cheers and good wishes to Scott and Tanya. Thanks to my wife, Joyce, for her help and support. Hope you've enjoyed this, the 18th edition of Dave's Gone By, Seeing Shadows. I've seen mine, so it's time to go back into hiding for 6 more days of winter. Please send your comments, suggestions, and irradiated military debris to davesgoneby@aol.com or snail mail box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557. See you next week, 7:30 Sunday night. Don't miss your Groundhog Days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night.
I will go on my way and jump the hedges first.
Good weather.
Drink the clear, clean water for to quench my thirst.
Oh, gone by.